It's time once again for Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 5 years has shared with us her extensive research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force its control over the legislative, executive, and judicial processes in America. And now, Mae Brussel.
Good afternoon. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. It's November the 15th, 1976, and this is number 243 in an ongoing series from Dialogue Conspiracy. I mentioned last week during the program that I would talk about government mind control and the use of LSD and behavior modification, which is an important part of all of these conspiracies. It's the ingredient that holds them together, the erasing of memory and behavior changes. But I'm going to put that off till next week, and I'm going to talk about the committee in Washington, D.C., that's investigating the assassination of John Kennedy and Martin Luther King. And next week, Monday, on Dialogue Conspiracy, is the 13th anniversary since the assassination of John Kennedy. But we'll sort of make some comments on it today in the Carmel area because these tapes go to other areas and they'll be playing at just about the time of the anniversary of Kennedy's assassination. I was home last night, Sunday night, and I got a phone call about 12 at night or 1 in the morning from one of America's very finest researchers, a very dedicated person from the Los Angeles area, who was excited, and he called me. He got information from somebody in the news media that Mark Lane was out in Los Angeles at a meeting called the Human Growth Society at the Bel Air Sands Hotel. This was Sunday evening, November 24th, 1976, and that he was speaking to these people about his committee in Washington, D.C. that's opening up the Kennedy assassination, and he had spoken at a bank Friday in the same city. And among other things that he said to the group was that he helped bring Richard Sprague to head the congressional investigation that's going on in Washington that will proceed as soon as the inauguration is over, probably at full speed. But there is this congressional committee opening up the Kennedy assassination, the Martin Luther King assassination. And Mark Lane told them at this meeting, he said, these are quotes as close as I could get. I understand that Mark denied saying them on Sunday, but he said them on Friday. And I heard from somebody who was there Sunday. He said, I'm on the inside of this investigation, and I'm monitoring who the nuts are, because if there's anything I know well, and I've been here from the very beginning, it's the nuts and the crazies. And I will see that that committee in Washington does not get 1 ounce of evidence from them. And that starts with Mae Brussel and Sherman Skolnick. And that's Mark Lane in Washington, D.C., advising the committee. And I have the address and the phone number I'll give you later to write Richard Sprague, who's heading the committee, if you're interested, and write to Sherman Skolnick in Chicago. Well, that isn't new for Mark Lane. He was on WBAI in New York City for hours last Sunday night, for 5 hours, trying to discredit a lot of the things I've done, a lot of the work I've done. And then he was on again an afternoon program. And this tape will go to WBAI in New York because I get equal time to answer Mark Lane's charges. And so the Dialogue Conspiracy will be sent to WBAI, and I will answer some of his charges. A lot of people ask me, what's going on in Washington? Will the investigation be cleared up? How is it going to proceed? Somebody just asked me this afternoon. I was in the shoe repair shop. Do you think they'll come to the truth? And my opinion is that, unfortunately, it will not be the investigation that I would want it to be, any more than Watergate investigated what really happened in 1972. To open up Watergate, I considered opening up the Dorothy Hunt plane crash, the death of J. Edgar Hoover, the shooting of George Wallace, the accident at Chappaquiddick, and back to 68, the Robert Kennedy assassination, and the Howard Hughes money behind it, and the links to Larry O'Brien and the Democratic Party. And not one of those 5 or 6 things was touched by the Watergate investigation. So I don't consider that Watergate has been investigated at all. And because it's very confusing to people to know who the researchers are and which sides are lined up in Washington, D.C., and to answer the allegations of Mark Lane, I'll give you a brief summary. Working with Mark Lane, he's the author who wrote Rush to Judgment. It was about the third or fourth book on the assassination, but the bestseller in America, is George O'Toole, who wrote a book called The Assassination Tapes. And George O'Toole was formerly with the CIA until he came out and began to help Mark Lane and appeared at Boston in 1975 at the Conspiracy Conference. Along with that team is Robert Groden, who formerly worked with Life magazine, which has been a conduit of the CIA for years and had the controversial Abraham Zapruder film, which nobody had access to and has not explained how he had it. And working on that team is Robert Sam Anson of the New Times. George O'Toole and Robert Sam Anson always attacked former District Attorney Jim Garrison in New Orleans, but they work closely with Mark Lane. And then there's Peter Modell, who's a writer and works in communications. Don Fried is part of the Lane, O'Toole, Groden team in Washington. He wrote the movie script Rush to Judgment. He did a play on the Rosenbergs. He got out the Glass House tapes with Lewis Tagwood and a book on Bobby Seale. But Don Fried is very loyal to Mark Lane and stands by him. He owns no copies of the Warren Commission hearings. He manages to get a lot of manuscripts and books out without much research or data compiled around him, at least, that's noticeable. And then along with that team, there's Jeff Cohn from Los Angeles, who publicly has damned Jim Garrison, who says that James Earl Ray killed Martin Luther King, and he's one of Mark Lane's cohorts. And then Bernard Fensterwalt is on Mark Lane's committee to investigate the assassinations in Washington. And Bernard Fensterwalt was James McCord's lawyer at the time of Watergate. McCord was in the CIA 21 years. He opened a law partnership in 1976 with James McClandless, McClandless, who's a former State Department intelligence official connected with the Air Transport, the CIA airline. And Fensterwald was considered, along with Mark Lane, as the chief counsel for the committee in Washington. Fensterwald's been described as a CIA mafia lieutenant. He poses himself as a Washington, D.C. lawyer. In 1967, Life magazine described the Senator Long hearings where they were trying to get at Robert Kennedy for investigating the mafia, and James Hoffa had given Senator Long $100,000 to put down Robert Kennedy because he wanted to break open the hold of the syndicate, and Fensterwald was the attorney that got his fees from the Hoffa Teamster Group. Fensterwald and McClandless, his law partner, are now located one floor below the offices of Intertel, the notorious Gestapo, FBI, CIA combine in Washington, D.C., that was formed by Nazis after World War II and is still the muscle of the Nazi data information internationally. And their offices are very conveniently located in this building right with Intertel. Mark Lane put Fensterwald back into some respectability after Watergate in 1972. His CIA cover was blown by defending McCord, but then he put him on his Citizens Commission of Inquiry. So you have Mark Lane, the author of Rush to Judgment, and George O'Toole with the assassination tapes, and Robert Groden and Peter Modell, who got a book out on the John Kennedy assassination, and Robert Sam Anson, who wrote They've Killed the President, and Don Fried. And these men have published by major publishers. They have been accepted by the major media, and they become the spokesman. And then on the other hand, you have these very serious researchers who've done years and years of work who can't get a publisher in New York City or any publisher at all that's worth anything. And they've had to put up their own money and practically go broke to do the best research in the country. And one of them is Harold Weisberg, who wrote Whitewash 1 and Whitewash 2 and 3 and 4 and a book called Cover Up on the Martin Luther King Murder. Harold Weisberg is perhaps one of the most detailed, finest investigators in the country. He is fighting with Mark Lane the same way that I am, but Lane doesn't attack him on the air as being responsible. I'm the one that he has singled out for the harshest criticism, along with Sherman Skolnick, and I'll tell you why. Then Penn Jones in Texas has published Forgive My Grief 1, 2, 3, and 4. Those are four volumes. Self-published again, paperback, had to do it himself, and it was in his early books that he mentioned that Mark Lane's Rush to Judgment was funded partly like by Clint Murchison, and that there was a definite conflict of interest in who was behind Lane very early in the conspiracy game. It was Penn who wrote that early, among the first researchers to catch that something was weird about this book and who was behind Lane. Bob Cutler up in Massachusetts has written Crossfire. He's written a book on the Bullet 399. He's written You, the Jury on Chappaquiddick. And Butler has had Cutler, rather, Bob Cutler has had to put up his own money for his own books. And the other Richard Sprague, who is not the investigator now in Washington, D.C., who's written many, many articles for Computer and Automation, and it's now called People in Pursuit of Truth, has a book out which is $10 called The Takeover of America 1, 2, 3, and he had to publish it himself also, and that's now available for $10. And Ted Gandolfo has the best collection of recorded history since the last 13 years of various witnesses and radio and TV interviews, everything that has been said over the air that could be used for the committee to show later if witnesses perjured themselves is available to the committee. But Mark Lane has sworn that Gandolfo's material can't be presented any more than May Brussels. And then there's my 26 volumes of cross-filing that I took 8 years to do of the Warren Commission work showing the errors, the inconsistencies, the perjuries, as well as the taped radio shows and the articles I've done for The Realist and Playgirl and Midnight. And Mark Lane will not allow those to be submitted to the committee. And Sherman Skolnick has done invaluable work. He is the other brunt of Mark Lane, who nationally, from coast to coast, everywhere he goes, is calling crazy. And Sherman Skolnick has done a monumental work in Chicago on cleaning up the courts. He has a committee. He has taped in radio broadcasts. Sherman and I are the only two people that have been in front of the media for 5 years, constantly hammering away with our facts on the conspiracies, and nobody has challenged us or dared take us to court. Sherman has taken various judges to court in Chicago, Illinois, and they've been removed from the bench because his research was so adequate. He's done extensive work on the Dorothy Hunt plane crash, on the plans to kill John Kennedy November 1st in Chicago, involving the Secret Service agent Abraham Bolden. He worked in the Chicago conspiracy trial trying to find out which were the agent provocateurs in his own area. And Sherman has committed the no-no, the two areas that I have done. And this is one reason that we're singled out by Mark Lane, is he has spent extensive time separate from me, but his work overlaps mine on mind control of the United States, on the MK Ultra plans and the control of human behavior. And he also has done extensive work on the American Nazis that were brought from Germany, not the Rockwell Nazis, but the other Nazis. And you can write to Sherman Skolnick. His address is 9800 South Oglesby Avenue, Chicago, Illinois, 60617. And you can send for his bibliography. And if you didn't get it, if I did too fast, you can write to me or call me at home, and I'll give you his address again and send him 25 cents or 50 cents and get his bibliography on mind control and Nazis that came over from Germany that went into behavior modification or the warfare state in America. And then look at his references. And Mark Lane is traveling with no references, just as I will mail out to you bibliographies upon which I base my statements. And you can have it and look up for yourself what I'm telling you on the air or in my lectures and decide why Mark Lane isn't touching this area and why he is in desperation not only to call us crazy, but to make outright lies. And being a lawyer, he knows better. But Mark Lane is a desperate man, and he's traveling the country absolutely freaked out and has to keep repeating over and over that we are irresponsible. And the reason he has to do it is that we're too close to the truth. And then the other researcher that has done wonderful work is Ted Sharrock, who did all the legwork on the Robert Kennedy assassination, produced The Second Gun. It's a complete documentary. Ted has done monumental work, and these are the people that will not be considered before the committee in Washington, whether it's Bob Cutler or myself, Harold Weisberg, Penn Jones, Sherman Skolnick, Ted Sharrock, are completely excluded because Fensterwald and the Lanes back there are going to hold the line, and they're desperate for what we know. And the fact is that name-calling isn't going to solve the problem of who killed Kennedy. And these people will only be shown for what they are, so it's just a matter of time until all of America understands what they're trying to do in their desperation. Now, the battle, in its simplest terms, is this. There was a conspiracy to kill John Kennedy. All you have to do is read the Warren Report and part of the 26 volumes of hearing and testimony to realize that. And the first cover story of the Central Intelligence Agency in this battle, working with the FBI, was that Oswald did it alone, that he hated society, he was jealous of the rich. Now, as the years went on and new exposures were about to come out, there were other levels of cover stories. One, Castro did it. There was a new article in the paper this week. You saw it. It went over out of the Washington Post that Lee Harvey Oswald was at the Cuban embassy in Mexico, and he told them he was going to be involved in killing Kennedy, and J. Edgar Hoover slipped this in his desk, and after he's dead since 72, this is 4 years later, Mr. Levy says, let's keep pursuing these files, and comes across this planted, falsified, forged document of Lee Harvey Oswald. If it existed at all, it means that J. Edgar Hoover was hiding the complicity of Lee Harvey Oswald and Fidel Castro in killing Kennedy, and I'm sure that he would have been as anxious to go after them as he was Alvin Creepy Carpus, because all of Hoover's cohorts had gambling and mafia syndicate connections in the Havana, Cuba area, and he would love to have put Lansky and his buddies back into power. And what better way to do it than to pull out the old Oswald did it with Castro and really pin down who killed John Kennedy, make J. Edgar Hoover a hero, and go back and invade Cuba and charge Castro with this crime. So this is delayed evidence, but this is one of the cover stories that Castro did it with Oswald and Jack Ruby. Then if evidence goes too far out of hand, there's certain agents of the CIA that are saying, no, the anti-Castro Cubans did it for a vengeance against the Bay of Pigs operation. And they did it with the mafia so they can bring in John Rosselli and Sam Giacano, who are dead, and then their CIA agents were killed this year, last year, Sheffield Edwards and William Harvey. So they have those dead people. And then there's other dead people like Alan Dulles of the CIA and J. Edgar Hoover, the CIA, of the FBI, and the oil people, Mr. Murchison, and Mr. Helms, or Mr. Hunt, rather, down in Texas. You can blame him. So you have a list of six or eight dead people that the committee can play around with or work on at that grassy knoll area, and still the conspiracy isn't fingered at the highest levels, say the Gerald Ford cover-up, the Richard Helms cover-up, the E. Howard Hunt involvement. The most important men of American history, Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, Richard Helms, and E. Howard Hunt, are still alive. So it'll be many, many years before that truth comes out of the role they played, and they also have Lyndon Johnson, who's dead. So it's 13 years since Kennedy is killed, and these investigators can work back there, get salaries as lawyers, give speeches, write books, just like Woodward and Bernstein did with their book on the Watergate. They can get a Pulitzer Prize. They can make a $1 million movie and be paraded all over the world. But that doesn't mean that the story of Watergate came out, and it doesn't mean that these people are telling the whole story about the John Kennedy assassination. Now, the areas that you can't get into, even though the evidence is available, the no-no is Oswald with the State Department. Marina Oswald is an agent of the CIA. The use of the Justice Department for falsification of documents and evidence. The police department planting photographs that were actually superimposed. The CIA creation of Oswald's doubles. Or the white Russian community. This is the no-no area where I have spent many, many, many years. And this is the Neverland, you can't get to it. This is the desperation of the people in Washington to keep from the committee. The role of Michael and Ruth Payne and George and Jean DeMorenschild and George Bowie, Max Clark, Gally Clark, Lydia Dimitrik, Anna Meller. Why is this a danger? Because when you break down the use of the white Russian community in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, it's no different than breaking down the anti-Castro Cuban community in Miami or the new Iranian police community that are in Washington, D.C., and are just building that new million-dollar barn in upstate New York, or breaking down the Korean CIA connections in the United States. The emigre community that are used for counterintelligence against the best interests of the United States have an identical pattern. And if you break the one in the Warren Commission hearings, which I did, then you can follow every conspiracy that's come down in the United States since then. Not only how it happens, but how emigre community are used and how the Justice Department and the Pentagon and the news media cover up. Now, people like Victor Marchetti and David Marks were in the CIA, and they wrote the book, The Cult of Intelligence. And they've come out and admitted that Jim Garrison was correct as the DA in New Orleans when he said that David Ferry and Clay Shaw were in the CIA. But what Victor Marchetti and David Marks refuse to go into is the link of Clay Shaw to the world Nazis, to Alan Dulles, to Reinhard Gehlen, Hitler's chief of intelligence for the Eastern Division, to General Walter Dornberger, the Nazi in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, the head of Bell Aerospace, where Michael Payne worked, where Marina Oswald lived with that family. That is the no-no line, is the world Nazism, the determination after World War II to continue what Hitler started and to bring Nazis, 1,000 of them and their families, into every institution in America. I talked about last week on Dialogue Conspiracy. When you talk about the continuing of the Fourth Reich, when you get to that very high level, that's the no-no. You can stay on the grassy knoll. You can stay there as long as you want. I heard Mark Lane speak at Beverly Hills High School in 1964, and I took voluminous notes, which I always do. I have since college. I went back to Boston in 1975, and Mark set up a blackboard and a pointer and gave the identical speech in Boston that he gave in 1964. And I was outraged because it was many years later, and we were still on the knoll. In the meanwhile, so many murders had taken place in this country, and I felt the important thing was to get the continuous line of what these people have done since Kennedy was killed, because Oswald, in my mind, is long gone forgotten, except how he links to today's news. Now, Mark Lane's favorite word for Mae Brussel is she's irresponsible. Irresponsible is the word he gives on every radio station, every lecture, irresponsible. Any of you who hear me, listen to this show on WBAI or Sacramento, whatever station this comes to, if you have a chance to see Mark Lane or hear him speak, ask him to give you one sentence of my research that is a direct quote that is irresponsible, because he is telling outright lies, and I have tapes of every radio show I've ever done and many of the major lectures and everything I've published. And he is throwing out falsified stories that I never said and calling them irresponsible. And the things that I have said, such at Boston, at the Boston conference that were taped, he will not allow me to introduce the people to him that I talked about, such as Bruce McFarlane, I mentioned, who was an inventor who was altered by the CIA and literally kidnapped from his family. I had his wife, Blanche McFarlane, meet Mark Lane in Los Angeles last year at UCLA, and Mark Lane walked away and continues to use the McFarlane story as being irresponsible. Now, Lane, it's very strange, has never been into my home. Almost every researcher that's been on the West Coast, and some came out just for that or came down from San Francisco or up from L.A., every person who is interested and is in the vicinity, and some made special trips, have been to my home to see my research. And this desperate man, Mark Lane, continues to make an opinion. He's been challenged by Ted Gandolfo. How can you call her irresponsible? I spent 4 days at her home. I have seen her work. And how can you say without seeing her work that there's nothing that you're going to let the committee in Washington see? Now, Mark isn't very gentlemanly about his accusations. He will make remarks and then he hides. He guts out and then he goes behind the curtain. At the New York University conference, he was screaming and yelling, "I want to save America. I want to save it." And someone from the audience or several people were saying, "Where is May?" And I got up and they wanted me to answer his attacks. And I said, "I will only answer them if Mark sits here with me and says them to me, and I will answer what he's saying." And Mark went off the stage and refused to do it. The other night on WBAI New York, Bob Fass had Mark Lane on the telephone. He was in Washington, I was in Carmel, and Bob let me listen to Mark Lane talk for 45 minutes telling outright lies that were even tape recorded by Ted Gandolfo. He recorded that evening show and 2 weeks earlier with Mark Lane, absolutely false statements, and I wasn't allowed to challenge him on the air so that the people in New York City could hear him explain those lies to them. So that while he was talking, I had to listen, and then I could get back on the air and say things. But that isn't what I want to do. I do not want to talk about him. I want him to meet me on the same program or else shut up, because he continuously goes about these attacks. Now, Mark Lane was doing serious work when Kennedy was killed, or I assume he was. I don't know who he was or where he came from. Another one of his stories is, "Mae Brussel calls me Boris, and I come from some other country. I have never said it. No person has ever heard me. There's no tape recording of it. I've called his office and denied it. And yet if people go to research in Washington, D.C., they say, well, we can't accept Mae Brussels' material. She calls Mark Boris. That is typical out of Philip Agee's book, Inside the Company, when he describes how the media operates. I know that book quite well, and he tells how the media works to discredit somebody. He says they take false information and attribute it to a real source and continue saying it, and it can't be attributed, but they repeat it over and over. And Mark is doing this kind of thing with that Boris. Now, in 1964, the Warren Commission was worried about Mark Lane. I've read the minutes of some of the meetings. They didn't know how to handle him, so he evidently wasn't in their hands at that time. By 1966, Lyndon Johnson sent out a memo to get the researchers and photograph them, blackmail them, catch them in whatever sexual positions you can, and compromise them. I have the minutes of those meetings. They've been transcribed of the committee in Washington, D.C. They investigated this last year. It was November the 8th, 1966, when the order went out from to J. Edgar Hoover and Marvin Watson to get all people critical of the Warren Commission report. That would be Mark Lane. And at Senator Schweiker's hearing just last year, this is from page 51 of the hearings, they said that they have raw files, biographical material. And Mr. Smothers, the FBI agent, said, yes, it seems to reflect what the FBI had on that individual. Some of them are very brief. One person in question is described as a person who thrives on dissension and causes local dissension and arguments in his community. They talk about his educational background, the marital status, and so forth. Senator Schweiker said, I understand there were some derogatory material included in this without getting into specifics. Mr. Smothers says, yes, there's one that reflects a morals arrest. It appears again to be a vacuum clinger situation, whatever that was. And then he says it goes into morals violations. And Senator Schweiker says, is this an attempt on the part of the White House or the FBI to set the record straight to discredit people who disagreed with the findings of the Warren Commission or to use material against them in a way to be knowledgeable about the material in the raw files? And Mr. Smothers said, to be fair, I don't think they were asked to make use of it, but they were asked to provide it. And every indication is that the FBI provided it. They took no steps further to disseminate it, but the White House had it. And Senator Schweiker said, so that the request initiated from the White House, is that's not an internal FBI request. It came from the White House. And he said, that's right. And Schweiker said, I think it's very interesting because it indicates to some extent that you became an intelligence target of somebody or interest, certainly, if you disagreed with the Warren Commission. I think we have to ascertain if the material was used in some way. There certainly have been some allegations that this material was in fact used in some way, whether it was in fact used by the White House or somebody else. We have to find out. Now, that was Mr. Senator Schweiker last year wanting to know. And I did hear that Mark Lane's name was among those people. And the material is in the hands of Hale Boggs' widow, Mrs. Boggs. And I think it's very important to know if Mark Lane's name is among those morals charges for this reason. I'm sick and tired of his lies, and I'm sick and tired of his insults. You see, I have nothing to hide. I have nothing at all to hide that anybody can pull out and say, May, stop your work. You're going to embarrass your family. You're running for office. You're going to lose your law degree. You'll be smeared. I have nothing to hide. And I challenge Mark Lane to stand up and let us know if his name's among there, because there's no reason for him to be spearing me and Chairman Skolnick unless he has something to hide, because we have done some of the best research in the United States. And I think it's time that we find out whether the morals charges applied to him, because his name was mentioned in other documents at that time period. And that's when Mark Lane began to change personality. Now, Mark Lane had said on WBAI that Mae Brussels asked to work with him and said that I worked with Mark Lane for 11 years. That is a total, absolute lie. He can't find one lecture, one witness, one tape recording, and most of the things I've said have been recorded, that I ever said I worked with Mark Lane for 11 years. I heard Mark Lane at the Beverly Hills High School in 1964. I had no contact with him at all until 1967 when I went to New Orleans to see Jim Garrison, who at that time had arrested Clay Shaw. When I walked into the room in New Orleans at the DA's office, Mark Lane walked out the door, 1967. I had dinner, went to Jim Garrison's home, spent 3 days in New Orleans, and never saw Mark Lane. And he never said, why did you come here at your personal expense of $300 or $400? You brought evidence for Jim Garrison. I had called Jim Garrison's office from Carmel, California, and said, look up the Riley Coffee Company. Really, Harvey Oswald got his CIA money there, but he didn't work there. And in 1975, 76, we find out the Riley Coffee Company was funded partly by Mullen Associates, the CIA front in Washington, D.C., that was involved in the Watergate. And I knew that Riley was Oswald's dummy front place for money. And I went to New Orleans to help Jim Garrison, and Mark Lane never said in 67, why are you here? Now, in 1975, there was a conspiracy conference in Boston. I went to that conference, and Mark Lane told another lie on the radio in New York. He said that I came up to him and said, are you Mark Lane? And started talking to him. Absolute lie. I flew into town. There was a radio program from about 9 to 11. Mark Lane, Don Freed, Penn Jones, and myself. My airplane didn't get in until 8:30. They met me at the airport. I came right in. The men were very friendly, all gave me a big kiss. Hello, mate. We did the rest of the two-hour show, went out to dinner at a Greek restaurant directly across the street. And I didn't have two words to say to Mark Lane. I brought him some documents from the National Archives, which I didn't believe he had, that even involved him or mentioned his name. He refused to accept them. And I did not see Mark Lane to talk to him at that conference except to sit next to him at the table. Now, Mark Lane got on WBA last week and said, at the Boston conference, Mae Brussels got up there and the things she said were so embarrassing and laughable and pathetic. I was really feeling sorry for her. Everyone was laughing at her. Not true. I called Dick Gregory last week when I heard what Mark was saying. I said, Dick, did you remember the conference? Dick Gregory and Flo Kennedy sat in the room where I was lecturing, not where the others were. I said, did you hear what happened? He said, yes. Did you like the research? Yes. And he described my research as compared to the other people. I said, will you call BAI and tell them what you heard? It was after the Boston conference that I met Flo Kennedy, met Bob Fass. Bob Fass from BAI was so impressed with the whole conference, he played my tapes over and over again. And after that, I made friends at WBAI in New York, hundreds of them in New York City. So that in April, when they had a conference at New York University and Mark Lane said he wouldn't appear with me, it was BAI and the Elgin Theater that set up a lecture for me. And there were about 700 people there that morning. It was crowded. And I spoke to them, and Bob Fass introduced me as the greatest researcher in the United States. So evidently, these people were not laughing. The station played my tapes over and over again and didn't think any of that research was funny. And now, a few years later, when he made this remark, Bob didn't even challenge what Mark was saying about the Boston conference. And yet, through that Boston conference, I met many, many fine people. It turned me on to many researchers from the eastern area and some that had come out from other areas. And it was a turning point in extending my work from the West Coast here to the East Coast. Mark Lane has said that I attacked Jim Garrison. Outright lie. Never in my life have I attacked the district attorney, former district attorney Jim Garrison. In the first printed article I ever did, Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped in The Realist, I included the part about Jim Garrison being attacked by Pershing Gervais and the Justice Department. I included Jim. The whole back page of my article included Jim. I've never in one radio show or one written article or interview at any time attacked Jim Garrison, and I've had tremendous respect for him. Yet, Mark Lane travels and works with Robert Sam Anson, Jeff Cohn, George O'Toole, who constantly publish articles. O'Toole puts down in articles Jim Garrison. Jeff Cohn puts down Jim Garrison. Robert Sam Anson puts down Jim Garrison. And those are Mark Lane's cronies, and yet he gets on the radio or goes around the country telling outright lies when he's really associating with the people who are doing what he's accusing me of. And this is a desperate man because he's a lawyer and he knows better. And he's being exposed at the highest level. I will continue to expose the committee back there. And he wants it to be a success like Leon Jaworski wanted Watergate to be a success. Another bone of contention is I went to Boston and I mentioned a man named McDonald and I didn't know his first name and I didn't know what I was talking about. Outright lie of Mark Lane's. I was referring in Boston to a man named Hugh McDonald, who wrote the book after the Boston conference called Appointment in Dallas. I was introduced to this person, Hugh McDonald, by a Paul Wurzel, who produces the FBI story. He wrote those for years in Los Angeles, the son of Saul Wurzel, the movie producer. He called me that a man in Los Angeles who worked for the CIA, for Howard Hughes, for the Sheriff's Department, knew a person and had tape recordings of a man who turned out to be, it was Saul, there would be a chance that I could meet him in Canada. And I asked various people, other researchers, to go up there. I didn't think, as a woman alone and not having the money to go there, it was safe. But I told them at the conference about Saul and that he was available. And then finally, Hugh McDonald wrote his own book, Appointment in Dallas. But that was the McDonald. The McFarlane I was talking about was Bruce McFarlane, former director of the Electronic Research Laboratory. He had a outfit up here in the Bay Area, in Los Loma up here, called Project Mascar, which was low-cost, non-toxic, 100% pollution-free, smogless fuel for automobiles. He directed laser beams to the moons. It was one of his ideas. He invented death rays from the lasers down to the ground that are being made right now at Hunter Liggett. Bruce McFarlane was taken by a woman, atypical fashion, removed from his family, was altered psychologically, a reduced semi-vegetable. The government has taken his inventions. Among his inventions are mass amplifier. I've got a list of 30 inventions that he has made for NASA and work that they have used. And he used to work at the Lawrence Lab up in Berkeley, in that area, I understand. His wife lives in the Los Angeles area, and she was desperate to what happened to Bruce McDonald, which has happened to other researchers, and I took the liberty of introducing her to Mark Lane to clear up what he was saying and smearing about me, and he walked away and refused to see this woman, who is a very intelligent, fine person, and refused to understand what was happening. One of the things he talked about last week on the radio as being totally irresponsible is that laser beams come down and are used as weapons. It May Brussels says these things. I got a call yesterday. I was talking to a man who works at the Monterey Herald, who had an article 2 months ago in the paper here, who is very concerned about Hunter Liggett, which is Monterey County, which is making laser beams as weapons to kill people. And I said, oh, that's funny that you're talking about that, because Mark Lane is blasting me coast to coast as being irresponsible when I talk about laser beams as weapons. And the reason I talk about these things is that the same people who killed Kennedy are the same people making the weapons. There's a linear connection to why Kennedy was killed. And this is why I pursue mind-controlled laser beams. What's happening to us now is as important as what happened to John Kennedy in the motorcade 13 years ago. But Mark would refuse to meet me and talk about Mr. McDonald or Mr. McFarlane, and I know their names perfectly well, and he knows I know it, and why he has to spend his time when there's so much more important things to do to get on the radio and talk about this, I don't know. Now, Henry Gonzalez is a congressman from Texas who has had an amendment to open up the killing of John Kennedy and all the other assassinations. And there's a group of people like Rusty Rhodes and working for Mark Lane, committees all over the country, the Assassination Information Bureau out of Boston, and a whole team of them wanting to sign the Gonzalez Amendment to open up the assassination. Well, I think that's fine to open it up, but I never had confidence in Henry Gonzalez. I've written him. I've told him why. It was Representative Gonzalez who was at Parkland Hospital with Lyndon Johnson the day Kennedy was killed, and the clothing of John Connally was handed to him, and he took his pants and shirt and coat, and they ended up in an apartment in Washington where dry cleaned. Now, I feel very uneasy about this. If there was a Mr. Jones and he was given the order to destroy the John Kennedy automobile, which was destroyed as a big piece of evidence in this giant conspiracy, and then Representative Jones wants to find out who killed Kennedy, I think you'd have a good, healthy suspicion of where the car went. And I think that if Representative Gonzalez is going to open this up, he owes it to us to tell us the full chain of command about the Connally clothing, because the whole bone of contention is that the bullets came from the front, the fatal bullet came from the front that killed John Kennedy and not from the Texas School Book Depository. And I've never been willing to get people to sign an amendment with Gonzalez's name on it until we found out how the clothing were destroyed. It's just simple logic, and I feel that he owes it to us to explain that and be the first witness before any committee, particularly one bearing his name. Now, Sherman Skolnick and I are the brunt of this attack that keeps going on by Mark Lane. And this, after 13 years' work and research, it's really pitiful. We're the only two people who independently, as I say, separately, have gone into the area of the mind control and into the Nazis in America that directly linked to the past assassinations. And one area of Nazi that I'm concerned about is a Walter Dornberger, who was at Bell Aerospace, as I say, that Michael Payne worked for, and Lee Harvey Oswald stayed at that home. Dornberger was listed in the book Project Paperclip as being a number one menace to the free world, that he had intentions of keeping this Hitler Nazism alive, and in England they wanted to send him to Nuremberg and hang him. But Mr. von Braun, Werner von Braun, said, no, I have to bring him to the United States. And NASA has been named as part of this grand conspiracy. And I think the role of von Braun and Dornberger is terribly important. And I want to know who is protecting those Nazis, and I want to know why, and why the name crazy is applied to people who bring this out. The accusation that Mark Lane has been making is that Mae Brussel is hurting the committee. It's McCarthyism all over, that I could be an agent of the CIA, that Ted Gandolfo is an agent of the CIA. That is just totally wrong, and he knows it. What McCarthy used to do during the McCarthy years was to smear people, not allow them to defend themselves, not allow them to bring evidence, hurt reputations, blacklist, and smear people because they were labeled as communists. What I want to do is to meet Mark Lane or Robert Groden or Peter Modell or George O'Toole eyeball to eyeball and debate them on this entire assassination saga and ask them why the case of Albert Osborne, who sat with Lee Harvey Oswald on the bus going to Mexico, isn't as important as Bullet 399, or the fact that Osborne wrote the handbills Fair Play for Cuba that Lee Harvey Oswald was distributing. And I want to know the full story of the Lee Harvey Oswald saga. I want to know the house on Neely Street that was a CIA safe house. There are a lot of elements of this conspiracy that are being covered up, and I want to know why. So I don't go around smearing people. I think anyone who's listened to the show for 5.5 years or 1 year or 1 month knows that I mention a lot of names every week, but I will give you books and references to read where you can look it up and figure it out for yourself. And if you challenge my information, you can call me or you can correct me. It's very interesting that after speaking at various colleges around the country and doing radio interviews around the country and doing continuous radio shows, that my facts have not been challenged and I have not had to backtrack on anything that I've said in 5.5 years, on not one thing. If you have any question, you're always invited to call, to write me a letter. What I get when I talk on these programs is more information. People call me from around the country continuously doing work from Florida, Pennsylvania, Houston, Texas, from Los Angeles area. I have a map in my study, and I have the names of these very fine people that are behind finding books and records and documents that have followed the feelers or the questions I've asked, and they fill in the pieces, whether in Salinas and Carmel. And it's sort of like the production of Chorus Line. Behind the superstars of the conspiracy research are literally hundreds of loyal people reading these books that are coming out, cross-filing them, cross-referencing them. Now, it's a shame that Mark Lane says that Mae Brussel is hurting the movement. The movement of research is a bowel movement. That's all it is, and that's all I have to say to him. Investigating a cancer cure or a book on the life of Adolf Hitler by Tolan is a research project. It's not a movement. I'm not a movement. If you want to find the cure to cancer, there's no cancer movement. And what's going on in Washington is nothing but a big movement, a bunch of turds and a bunch of diarrhea. And the fact is, if I sound angry today, I'm disgusted that after 13 years, that this man is so desperate that he will not meet face to face, that he speaks and runs, lies, falsifies the truth, where documents and tape recordings of conversations show him to be a pathological liar. So I have a lot more to say about Mark Lane. I hope I don't have to spend any more time on Dialogue Conspiracy about it, because we want to get on with the facts of the case, and that's all that really matters. So that's all for today. If I sound angry, I am mad. I'm mad getting called early in the morning and being told the man is still bad-mouthing this kind of crap. Well, we'll be happier next week. We're going to talk about mind control for sure. Take it easy, and that's all for today on Dialogue Conspiracy.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for many years has been researching the facts behind political assassinations and conspiracies in this country. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM in Carmel, California.